Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted SEO podcast host. I'm here with Dan Kurtz of Miss Papper AI. Tell me what your role is there and how you fell into it.
Sure. So Miss Papper AI was born out of a software that I worked on probably back in 2012, 2013. That, you know, it was doing good. Google penalty hit it, you know, system-wide footprint. Obviously, we were all learning at that time. So it took the project, mothballed it. Fast forward to 2020, nothing to do, took it back out of mothballs and kind of resurrected what we were doing there and kind of rolled that over into a full service agency.
Tell me a little bit about your history. Like, did you build into SEO organically? Did you learn it somewhere else? Were you in the freelance game or in the agency side?
Yeah. So kind of started. Probably best place to start is 2006. Indian Philippines come online. I was going to college for graphic design and went, oh no, not going to work. So went ahead, made a pivot, picked up Seth Godin's book, Linchpin, read that about how to become indispensable and all that, and went, what can I jump to that makes the most sense for where I'm at? And went to marketing. So started doing that, taking courses and all that, and then stumbled across where most people probably got started, Black Hat World, you know. So fell in there, started reading some articles, a couple of the downloads and rips that were in there, and just kind of getting a sense of what the industry looked like. I'm like, okay, well, I already know how to build websites. That's easy enough. And somebody was talking about Rank and Rent at the time. So I'm like, okay, let me start doing that. Let me build websites for other businesses and then charge them for the leads. Started doing that and fell into that. That was good. Got some numbers under my belt and then decided to go complete 180 and said, let me go ahead and do the hardest industries I can find for affiliate stuff. So wound up in gambling, wound up in, you know, all the three P's of Black Hat SEO kind of. So, you know, some adult stuff, some of the pharmaceutical stuff at the time. And then of course, poker. So
there's a lot of lessons there to learn on the fringes. I interviewed Timothy Malmrose, who also, you know, played around in that world. And it's interesting to compare the viewpoints of, you know, the whitest hat SEO to the blackest hat SEO and kind of look at the spectrum of how your viewpoint really impacts your strategic decisions.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And so for me in doing that, it was kind of the old comic spy versus spy. You've got the white coat and the black coat and they're fighting each other. So on one side, learning how to do all of the black hat stuff. And then on the other side, learning how to do all of the white hat stuff. And just kind of finding that middle ground in between is like, okay, well, with judicious, you know, judgment, I can use up to X amount of things here, but I can't use them over there. And just kind of trying to learn the breadth and depth of how far you could push SEO was really my goal. Is like, how big is this pond if I decide to go play in it? And it turns out it's pretty big and also a very small community.
I'm curious because the .ai domain extension is relatively new. So going with the .ai extension, let's talk just classic, you know, top level domain talk for a second. Do you think it makes any difference now, .com, .ai, .agency? You know, is there, you know, is it a branding play? Is there, you know, any downside or upside, or is it just, hey, get what fits your brand that you want to make and it's affordable and aligns? Or is there any secret sauce you're ignoring?
So, like any good SEO, it depends. What I would say is for that, a lot of people are still used to com.org, info.us, stuff like that. The originals, of course, over the years, we've gained a couple, we've torched a couple, like .xyz. That, you know, they were extensions and then they got used for nefarious purposes and that kind of took them out. I think going forward, it's, where we're at with SEO right now is, of course, everything is getting ingested into AI engines, right? So I think over time, that'll become less of a thing. It still counts, of course, for metrics, expired domains, EMDs, all that stuff works to some extent if you know what you're doing. But I think the going forward and having the data ingested by the AIs and having that kind of replace what we're seeing with search right now, I think that's going to kind of go out the window and it won't really matter. Of course, for us on the back, a lot of that stuff, we can still do authority stacking and whatever, you know, fun little tricks that everybody likes to use for their own SEO because everybody's got a different method, right? So I think to an extent, those will still work to kind of bolster, you know, authority, topical relevance, things like that. But I don't think that in the future going forward, that we're probably going to be looking at what equates to the ChatGPT screen in order to go ahead and find stuff. Probably in Google here pretty shortly.
So you think they're going full AI mode most of the time in the next couple of years?
I think it just makes sense for the path that they're on. Like search crawlers are down, like traditional Google bots down, I think something like 60% crawling sites, but AI bots are up 80%. For doing the crawling and retrieval, just looking at server logs and stuff like that, you know, got my own sites that I can see those kinds of tests on. I think it's the way that they're pushing forward because they've got that AI mode tab for right now, but I imagine sometime in the future, that's going to become the default. And it's just going to be the same search bar that you've always known, but it's going to generate that AI page.
Do you think about the current mindset model, you know, where we're facing an age of AI slop? My friend McDougall wrote a little bit of analysis on the AI slop that's happening right now in terms of, you know, results. But do you think it's something where, you know, putting your agency AI centric is, you know, looking more long term as these things become more normalized, as it's better adopted and understood, some of the lower quality stuff is going to start falling by the wayside and we'll see, you know, better, you know, more human representation, better hybridized, higher quality stuff. So, you know, a lot of AI slop connotations or connections is just a feature of the moment versus a long-term concern. Or is AI slop something that just because the ubiquity and easy access to mass content creation, it's going to be a headache we live with for a long time?
So I think there's a couple ways around that. Google, of course, being around as long as it has and all the ways that it's been gamed in the past, right? So in the, you know, years prior, you had keyword stuffing. Famously, there was the lorem ipsum test with rhinoplasty plano, things like that, where people were creating actual slop, you know, using lorem ipsum and just simply replacing the keywords and the LSIs in the article were ranked number one. So slop has always been around. It's just we can create more of it at scale. And I think with what we're doing, you know, at some level, there's going to become an algorithmic rollout where Google will see everything across the board and do what it always does and push an algorithm update and say, this is scaled content abuse. Don't pay attention to these sites. They've got a lot more skin in the game, so they'll probably be the first to do this. But I imagine the other three or four, you know, will follow suit, meaning GPT, Claude, Grok, whatever else is out there, Perplexity, they'll have to follow suit. And they're also going to have to put stop triggers on certain websites based on how they're getting that data or how they're retrieving that data.
That's fair. I'm curious about your agency model in this flux time. Are you going full digital marketing agency, full stack ads, social media, SEO, AI overviews, GEO, and everything? Or is there a narrow selection in terms of strategy or in terms of messaging of which piece of the market you're trying to address?
Sure. So we're focused on the 5 million range for most of our businesses. So ICP sits in that 5 million pocket. Anybody smaller than that is probably not ready to play. Anybody larger than, let's say, 25 million is probably out of scope. And the reason being is not only are we doing the migration to SEO, GEO, whatever flavor you want to call it, that's moving forward, meaning watching the AI overviews and everything else and figuring out how to scale that. But at the same time, we're also building tools internally for our own sake. So one of the tools that we're building is AI-powered appointment setting. So based off of a database that we have, we've got 280 million records in the United States for B2B and B2C. Out of those, probably 85 million B2B only. But we can find those people, see where they've been browsing, what they've been currently searching for, and then queue up paid ads, cold email, social messaging, all of those things to nurture them towards that appointment. So by the time they've started getting cold email from us, they've seen us everywhere. And we're rolling that out now for clients as well. We've also positioned ourselves to build an AI-powered, how do I want to describe this, thought leadership platform for corporate, for execs, because they have, you know, they're best in the industry, best in class, but they don't have time to sit there and make posts and press releases and blog posts and all that kind of stuff. So what we've done is built a system that allows them to basically be interviewed by an AI, you know, using 11 Labs for the back and forth conversation piece, saving that into our system as their own specific second brain, for lack of a better term. That seems to be the one that everybody uses. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of buzzwords in this episode. So they wind up with their second brain. So essentially, for those listening, if you don't know, haven't heard second brain, or you're not an AI at all, it's the idea that concepts, ideas, morals, values, everything about that person, calendar appointments, all that stuff, can be saved to a collection of database files that then can be read at random. Essentially, it's a MySQL database for a person. And then that could be fed into social posting, what's currently going on in the market. And then we've got a few tools that we've stacked in there as well that do pulling recent news reports, social listening. We've even managed to go ahead and build in Hermes directly to the platform, so they have their own content production and marketing agents at their fingertips.
It occurs to me that everything, you know, we're doing now used to be done worse and slower overseas. Do you feel like the AI model has really unlocked a lot of the digital marketing potential that was unavailable because of the bulkiness of the process, and a lot of agencies got bogged down and just decided to productize, we offer 4 blog posts a month and some link building, and, you know, we'll call it a day.
Yeah, I've never liked that model. You know, deliverables in SEO means that you're not paying attention. It's your focus on making sure you hit that quota every month. It's, you got to hit X amount of blog posts, you got to hit X amount of guest posts, you got to do Y amount of this, and it feels very static. I'm sure there are some agencies that are doing really well with it. I feel like in the age of where we're at and how fast everything is pivoting, and not just us as individuals with, you know, being AI enabled or AI powered, whatever you want to call it, but the companies as well, they're now able to turn a lot faster. We're seeing, you know, a lot of the big companies screw this up by firing, you know, 10,000 employees and replacing AI and going, oh, they need to work hand in hand. And it's a, you know, $600 million mistake that they learned. But our goal with doing what we're doing is building everything out so that the AI enablement layer is first, and then the human works with that layer, so that it's not a, we're going to replace you. It's a, we're doing everything to make sure that you as an individual are like supercharged to do what you're supposed to do. There's no scope creep in your role. There's no, hey, can you just, none of that. You sign up for the thing, you do the thing, everybody's happy. Because without having a lot of that stuff in place, it's, you know, scope drift, scope creep, you know, additional piling on of responsibilities for whoever's doing the work. And I don't have any interest in doing that to an employee. Like, I feel like they should be able to have time to do their work. And also while they're on their clock, I want them to go enrich themselves. So spending an hour, 2 hours going out and learning something that's useful to their role or where they are, or coming up with an idea where they can feed it back into the system and say, hey, this might make my job 10 to 20% easier. Can you open up a test bed and we'll go try it? Sure. You know, I'm all for enablement and stuff like that, but I feel like the employees, especially going forward, whether or not they're working in our agency, somebody else's agency, anywhere on the open market, having those skills and knowing at least the basics of how to use AI and navigate it, or are going to be especially critical here coming up shortly.
It does seem like there's a lot of cross-pollination. You know, there's like this fundamental skill that I've even had to learn of, moving from, using basic desktop or web-based Claude and then understanding, oh, hey, Claude desktop is a different thing, then moving deeper and, oh, hey, Claude Code is an even different thing. Is there any unlocks that you have really enjoyed getting to as you've kind of started to adopt your SEO thinking and SEO capability and merging that with AI capabilities?
Yes. So some of the stuff that we're doing, and I'm glad you mentioned Claude, that's kind of where I have my day-to-day stuff. So what I built in there was a series of, I guess you'd call them plugins inside of Claude. But I built myself an AI-powered operating system. So every morning, boot the computer up, open up Claude, and it goes, using MCP connectors, goes into all of my accounts, scrapes everything. So at a top level, I can see everything that needs to be done for clients from our project management software, calls that I have to get back to people about that maybe came in after hours on Friday and over the weekend. And all that stuff gets queued up for me in a nice little list, and then that reports in to me as, hey, here's where we're at, here's what's going on, here's the, the needle movers for today, here's what you should be focused on. And then as I do those things, it'll then give me a 3 p.m. update and let me know here's what's going on with all of that again. So I get the 7 a.m. and then I get a 3 p.m. update for everything, and then just close out what I can, close the laptop, and then next morning open it. It goes and scrubs everything again against that list, and just it keeps the productivity super high because it knows how I work, where I'm working, all those different things, and then it knows where I fall short. So what I've done is, as a really good supercharger, is go and take some of the personality tests that are out there. So DISC assessment, Myers-Briggs, things like that. If you're into the ethereal, you can also take your star chart and give it to the to Claude, and it'll learn your patterns of behavior based on your psychological profile, your DISC assessment, any of those other things, and it'll know when you're deflecting on doing something and like trying to push off. So if I say, yeah, I'll get to that later, it's like, no, because 6 out of 10 times you've tried to do this in the past, that hasn't happened, so I'm going to put this at the top of your list as a priority for today.
That's interesting because from my perspective, a lot of the downsides of AI to this point has been, it's built as a yes man. So I do like the idea of taking extra time to, code in, and it's not hard. It's not like actual coding, but taking the time to, give it input and direction to say, hey, this is what I'm like. This is, I'm going to come up with 50 different ideas like every single day. You're going to have to help keep track of them, but also help me prioritize and surface, with this framework of what's most likely to get done and also what would actually be best getting done. Because, I'll be running like 6 different instances of Claude Code in my terminal doing lateral things and kind of get lost in it. So I think I might take some time to like create a homepage and have it, or I did take the step of, hey, create me an executive assistant. And for me, the 2 biggest unlocks was asking it to visualize this in a browser tab. And hey, I just like it when you open stuff in browser tabs. And now it does it 3/4 of the time instead of lengthy stuff, because I look at the terminal output of all the white text and my brain goes, I don't know what's important in here and I don't want to, but then I'll go back and, oh, I would have missed something really important. So hey, throw it in a browser tab, throw some style on it. Like I've got an executive assistant, I've got a cache command center, I've got these are all bookmarks now in my on my browser. Hey, I've got visualize all of my 20 site marketing sites, DSE, GA, Microsoft Clarity, give me a little health card, kind of like what SEO Gets has done, but because I've got MCPs to all of these, It goes beyond just GA and GSE. I've also got my Microsoft Clarity going on, CRM stuff on a few of them, but both MCPs and asking it to open browser tabs for visualizations. Because that was kind of the challenge when I started with Claude Desktop. I was like, oh, I like how I can make these artifacts. But then I went to Claude Code. I'm like, this is just white text. So I realized I can ask it to make them and then bookmark them. And that's a much better system. I should do that.
Absolutely. So a fun one, and since you brought up Clarity, I'll bring it up as a fun little side quest for some people who might be listening, is what I'll do is take the SEO Gets report from the MCP. I'll take the Clarity report for, let's say, a given landing page or opt-in page that I'm working on, and then I'll give it access to that page on the site, and I will let it iterate based off the user data and the engagement metrics, the newest iteration of how that page should look. So I'm using it to actually do all my A/B testing.
That's a moment. Because that is something that would take, you know, a week or two with specialty, you know, training expertise and then like the meetings and trying to get a human to take that concept and execute at an agency, freelance, or in-house. But that is done. I mean, if you look at, you know, I remember going to, you know, MozCon in Seattle, and Suzuki-san was talking about, you know, a page that was, you know, ranked number 3, and he looked at the visual tracking, the heat mapping of the behavior, and you realized they were hitting a picture and then bouncing. You know, like, I don't know why this picture is so terrible. So he A/B tested replacing it. And ended up not just increasing, you know, full page scrolls down and activity on the page and got conversions, but actually improved rankings once they with the same weight image, just changed what the image was and the behavior changed the dynamic of that, of the activity on that page. And that was, that's been in the back of my mind of like, I'm missing part of this puzzle, but you're right. Like, if I've got Clarity MCP and that's as easy to access as, you know, page scroll metrics, as easy to access as, you know, page views, why not, you know, assign a task, a tool, a sub agent to use that as a testing bed? I like that.
Yeah, it's for us, it's worked well. So I've got it attached to my CRM. Unfortunately, we're using High Level at the moment, which seems to, you know, everybody's, you know, loves it, but it's also the bane of their existence in some points. But they have a really robust MCP. Now, combining that with Desktop Commander and their API documentation and giving that to Claude, I'm just doing this in Claude Cowork, by the way. I'm not doing Claude Code at all for any of the things I mentioned. But taking all of that and then giving it, hey, here's where the landing page is located. Here's how you set up an A/B test. And it will go ahead, duplicate it. And then using Go High Level's AI, Claude Cowork is going in and drafting the prompt that goes to Go High Level's AI and then building that A/B page in 2 or 3 minutes. So now I've got my AI talking to other AIs that are deploying websites.
I'm still on mostly WordPress. I haven't gone High Level yet, so I probably need to dive in and get used to, you know, that platform. I'm sure I'm going to run into a client that needs it. But the biggest unlock for me was realizing MCP for WordPress is stupid when you can just get a REST, R-E-S-T application password, hand it to Claude Code. It can wire you an unlimited MCP. You know, unless you have caching issues, it can do pretty much anything on a WordPress site. Make new ones, change design styles. I haven't found a single thing that I've asked it to do with a WordPress site that it hasn't been able to do.
Until you go to bulk update all of your metas and then your hosting provider shuts off that IP range.
Okay, that's fair.
I've had that happen twice now.
That's fair. That if you're sending a mass of calls, then you might need to understand the limits of your hosting. Good point. Let's caveat that. It can do anything, but if you have it to do too much of something, you might run into technical limits, not on the Claude code or the site, but on the hosting side. So that's a good call out. Are there any particular niches or verticals that you've been toying around with where you've had surprising results recently?
So, to be honest, the past couple of months, 6 months or so, has really been on product development internally. So we've built out some of the things I talked about. One of the other things that we've built out is creative strategy. So AI-powered copywriting. I know everybody that is hearing this is probably going, oh no, AI slop for sales. No, that's not it. We're talking about creating like static ads, deployments across Google Ads, Facebook, Meta, even going as far as demand side platforms, DSPs. So what we're doing with all these things is I've built an API into each of them. So everything we do for SEO, I've got a dashboard that's got an API. The thought leadership platform for the exec, that's got an API. The call and appointment setting platform, that's got an API. So now all of these all talk to each other and they're all passing baton data between each other. So as an ad campaign is doing really well, it passes that to the intelligence agent inside of the thought leadership platform for the exec and says, hey, we should draft a new landing page based off of what we're seeing with Clarity and SEO gets. Is that okay? Can you approve? And they'll say yes. And automatically that kicks off the rest of the software to go ahead and actually start doing all that. So it's now a little ecosystem flywheel machine. So sales talks to SEO, talks to marketing, talks to appointment setting. And essentially we're controlling the front and back office of whatever the business is that we're working with and just having it where this thing infinitely compounds the more data that we put in and they put in.
I have found a lot of value in, this format, human to human podcast. Is there any other, input into the system that you've found value in recently, or is it videos like the bee's knees?
So do you mean for like AI training and stuff? Or
just as like, if we're thinking, you're taking time to, create programs internally, we need kind of fuel for that fire. To avoid AI's lap, you can do architecture to a certain point, but at some point it does need external inputs to add, whether that's news or others. So what are those inputs you're putting into the system to balance, that you're trying to digest and get, a reasonable output that is AI or AI powered or AI filtered or organized, but isn't just relying on Claude's internal training database to come up with this information.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the thought leadership platform, we've got the news collector that we've built. So we're using an API there to pull relevant stories that they can then choose what's going on there. As far as what we're using to train, we've got Exa, of course, pulling from whatever I'm finding works. So like, each of these different things has a different facet to it. So the thought leadership platform mainly focuses on social posting. So we spent a lot of time looking at top performers on different platforms. So scraping, best of the best across, basically law of average verticals. So like, let's say top 100 accounts on each platform, what their style was, what the hook was, what the everything going into their system is. And a great feature to mention for that is if you're trying to transcript video to figure out what's going on, you don't have time to watch all these videos and figure it out, hook up Gemini to whatever it is you're doing and have it go ahead and do the transcription for you, or have it go ahead and watch the video frame to see how the hook lands, because it can do all that. So do it across 100 accounts times 10 social media platforms. You get a pretty good moving average, and then every week it'll go in and scrape whatever's new from that creator and pull that down. Gemini will process it, and we'll have a new idea of where the market is currently heading as a whole, where social's going. So we're doing things like that where it's, large polls. We're spending, it sounds stupid, but we're spending probably $50 a week in AI credits just doing that. But it's not huge, but it's, doing this years ago would have been a team of 100 people going and looking at 100 accounts and writing down what they thought.
Yeah, it does seem, that's definitely an unlock. It's kind of like your own marketing trend data, your own Google trend, seeing what's upcoming, what's the change in style, what's the subject matter change shift. Is there anything, are you doing end client-wise, are you working mostly in the B2B space or B2C space, or is it agnostic?
So the data and most of the stuff we do is agnostic, but most of our clients right now are on the B2B side. Just because a lot of the, like I mentioned, the data for the appointment setting, it has to be B2B by law because there's so many things coming out now. Of course, TCPA, GDPR, there's a bunch of stuff that just makes it more difficult to go to a roofer and say, hey, here's everybody who is a person in a 10-mile radius that's looking for a roof. And then all of a sudden people are showing up at their house. But, as a consumer, it's kind of, I don't like that. It's kind of yucky. So for a lot of the data stuff, we tend to stay with the B2B and work on that side. We do get local clients that come to us and I tell them exactly what they can expect. Here's what we'll do. Mainly we focus on meta ads right now, just because local is so, not that it's up in the air, but there's so many things changing all the time. Like the new thing that they're pushing with Google LSA ads, they're now going to lump them in with the regular ads, and it's going to be under PMax, from what I understand, if I remember how I read the article.
I'm going to have to talk to Lisa Rixler. She's my PPC host. Helping her do some interviews on the AI ads and beyond. I'll definitely, because LSA, is convoluted in itself, and then PMax has been convoluted. So sounds like Google mixing the bucket even more and making it harder to distinguish sounds kind of exactly what they would like to do.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I read the article wrong. I had to pull it up because if I'm going to spout things on a podcast, I want to make sure because I'm going to get a bunch of people in the comments, he's an idiot. So they're not going away, but apparently the dashboard is. They're being pushed into regular Google ads.
Okay. Well,
not that that's much better, but.
come see.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're living in Google supplied dashboards anyways, don't. I mean, has Google provided a good dashboard for any service anywhere ever? I mean, since GA3?
No. I mean, think about it from, you have all these platforms that do ads, right? Multi-billion-dollar companies, and their ad interface is garbage. It's absolute garbage. And they're like, oh yeah, you can't find this feature. It's 6 pages down, and then you have to go underneath this thing and then click the button. I'm like, dude. Like, oh yeah, we put this in a hidden div on page 5. Like, come on.
I'm curious, as talking with Matt Brooks of SEO Terek about, best plays to unlock your internal knowledge base. Is there anything that you're working on, since it's B2B, there's usually like a lot of internal knowledge that's locked away. Is there any work you're doing to, bring those forward, installing AI agents into their sites to allow people to access information more easily? Or is it an email gate that you put up in front of that stuff? Or is it, login only? Like, I'm curious if there's utilization through the site as a service that you've played around with on behalf of clients.
So we're toying around with it and trying to figure out what would work best as far as connectors, things like that, that as an AI or an LLM comes by, that they could just plug into, where essentially it becomes a real-time query box. And we're playing with ideas around it, trying to figure out things. If a bot comes and scrapes, can I not manipulate, but can I feed it the appropriate data that it's looking for instead of it going hunting for it? Doing it where it's just auto-queued up and it's just a high-five baton pass on the way out, and they just have the data.
There is something to that, because it's like, I apologies to whomever it was on LinkedIn that brought it up, that you know, Google says don't use Markdown, but it takes 3 times longer to load a full HTML page for a bot versus the tokens and time that it takes to process Markdown. And mm-hmm. then Markdown is organized the way it likes to. So there's that friction moment of like, oh, Google says this, but also the reality of processing means, you know, Markdown's easier for these AI surfaces, AI bots and tools mm-hmm. to process this. And my interview with Mike Montague was fascinating because he's like, hey, there's already an economy of, you know, millions of dollars being spent by AI bots with AI bots with no human involved directly. They, you know, that somebody gave a directive over here. They have gave them a wallet, told them what they wanted. The site had the capability to interface with the bot with that wallet and stuff was transacted. Mm-hmm. So are we looking at, you know, a layer of SEO optimization that goes against, you know, what's always been said, right for humans first, but maybe also understand that not all your create content for your visitors, but now not all your visitors are necessarily human, or even your human users are finding your information through that, I call it a bot sandwich, you know, mm-hmm. human bot sandwich, human bot.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a certain level to it. And what I mean by that is, so you've got this agentic layer, and back in, I think it was beginning of June or middle of June, Cloudflare put out a thing saying that officially bot traffic on the internet had surpassed human traffic, which is a big one. It's a big to sit with, is there's more automations and hooks out on the internet than there are people currently browsing. But to your point about having these separate Markdown files, as SEOs and content marketers, we've been doing that for decades. We call it multipurposing. We go ahead and take a blog post, turn it into an infographic, turn it into a YouTube video, make a reel, make a short, make a press release, all this stuff, because we know that multiple people learn in different ways and they have a preferred content type that they're going to go after. Bots have a preferred content type. Technically, they're just an additional customer. I would absolutely spend the time to go ahead and do that and invest in it, because the worst thing that can happen is they pass it. They fly over it. And that's just a matter of directing them to it next time they come to the website and saying, hey, this file exists. Which I found out through talking with some friends, and this is a super secret, you know, secret squirrel kind of thing. If you go ahead on your hosting provider, and you go ahead and you reissue a new SSL certificate, it will force all of the AI bots to recrawl your stuff all over again.
Oh.
So, and again, little on the nose tip, but you can get them to come back and pay attention if you do that. I don't know what the cadence is. I don't know what the frequency is. I'm sure somebody's going to go ahead and spam it to death and find out that their website doesn't take bots anymore. But if you do that, there's usually a resurgence of bots coming back to the site.
No, because
they say
safely, kids.
Right. Yeah. Like anything else, this is an M80. Watch your fingers and make sure you can still count to 10.
Yeah. It's salt is good, but if you just cover your plate in salt, there's a point where you're going to get sick.
Exactly.
But SEO has that tendency, you know, that there's that money on the table and the temptation to go that far. And I'm, you know, having played around in the black hat world, like that's, you know, 3/4 the motivation, you know, mm-hmm. as well as the thrill, you know, oh, I figured this out. And then you want to get bragging rights. So it's either bragging rights or money, or money, or bragging about the money that you made.
Right, exactly.
To kind of round out the interview, is there anything public facing? You know, if there's anybody who's, you know, working with that scale company, have you done anything that is research or data that people should digest or access from your site? And give a shout out to where you hang out, if they can connect with you, if they've got more questions after this interview.
Yeah, absolutely. So with a lot of the stuff that we're doing, as we're getting this final component of the flywheel connected and we're hooking clients up to this, I would imagine probably in the next 90 days or so, probably by Q1 2027, we'll have enough data from all of our clients as to what it looks like to build an agentic flywheel for a company and how that affects every aspect of the business. So with some of the clients we're working with a rather large corporate coaching company, and we're wired into all their data. So like, we built the website, we built them the thought leadership platform, the copywriting, all that stuff is already connected, and we're starting to see massive movement already. But we'll have data based off of that and be able to put that out probably Q1 as to how that all works, what went into it, you know, everything we can give away without giving away the farm, essentially. But a lot of the stuff we're using is the same tools that everybody else on the market has access to. I spent a lot of time developing and refining and going through some of that stuff. So like mentioning, you know, the thought leadership platform, we have Hermes built into a web interface for them to go and talk to the agents, and they schedule stuff and do stuff. It's like a cron job for content marketing for them, basically. But like, all these things are things that everybody has access to. It's just how much time do you want to spend on the development side actually building something static? Because as SEOs, we love tinkering with stuff, but never getting anything off the ground.
Yeah.
So my thing going forward has been, okay, if you're going to start this project, you damn well better finish it. So mapping out full scope, projected launch, all that stuff, and putting it all together and just trying to close the loop on that. So that's been kind of our focus, like I said, is doing all the SEO and GEO stuff, but have it tied to enablement platforms that everything else can kind of come to a consensus.
Well, this has been really in-depth. I'm glad to hear somebody else. Like, I feel like I'm tripping all the time into, oh, I could do this with it. So it's nice to hear like somebody else is experiencing that, but then taking the ball and then just like, okay, I'm just going to keep building this thing because I could get distracted. But there's compounding value to, you know, taking classic SEO thought work and processing, and then just actually building the systems that we've always actually really wanted. You know, like, I've wanted, you know, a way to, you know, tap into news information. And the only way to do that before was pay somebody outrageous price per article to produce that content very slowly based off of, you know, their human perspective. So, thank you so much for stopping by. I'll make sure that your site and resources gets linked in the show notes. For everybody that's listening, it's been Dan Kurtz with Miss Pepper AI. If you want to get more interviews like this one, check out unscriptedseo.com. Got a whole library of 150 plus SEO experts. If you want to learn SEO yourself and you're dabbling in the water, I've just started an SKOOL, my school, unscripted marketing. So come and join. I'm giving away 3 lifetime spots. If you just DM me, you can be one of the lucky ones to get in early. Putting a whole bunch of stuff and learning up there from these interviews. Thanks for stopping by, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I forgot to mention, if you guys do want to connect with me, you can find me posting stuff like this on LinkedIn. Or if you want me to, you know, generally insult the population, you can find me over on Facebook.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Take care.